Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavit Halfway. Iran and Russia are considering possibilities of opening a new chapter in their trade relations. Aside from both countries' cooperation in the field of nuclear technology, both Russia and Iran have many other similarities, especially when it comes to the West, and in particular, the United States. Both are experiencing disputed Western and U.S. sanctions, resisting the U.S. on its geopolitical objectives, like on Syria, and both are keen to break the domination of Western currencies, like the U.S. dollar, over bilateral exchanges.
In September, Tehran and Moscow signed a memorandum of understanding to boost ties between the two countries to counter Western sanctions imposed on Iran's banking sector over its nuclear program and measures imposed against Russia over the crisis in Ukraine. As part of the agreement, the two sides have decided to establish a joint bank in an effort to multiply bilateral trade to bypass sanctions by using their national currencies in trade deals. Now the two sides have once again come together to discuss regional interests. The secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, has met with his Russian counterpart, Nikolai Patrushev, in the Iranian capital, Tehran, as the region faces growing threats by extremist groups. During the meeting, the two sides expressed similar views on maintaining the sovereignty of Iraq and Syria. He added that categorizing anti-Damascus militants into moderate and extremist is impossible and illogical.
Otherwise, if the United States was serious about confronting the ISIL, the first thing that they would do is that they would put pressure on Saudi Arabia, because the source of the ideology comes from Wahhabism, which is funded by Saudi Arabia, continues to be funded by Saudi Arabia. And they would also put pressure on Turkey to stop supporting ISIL.
Nikolai Patrushev, for his part, said Moscow condemns terrorism in all its forms, and any action to fight extremist groups must be based on international law. The Russian official also stressed that Iran has the right to use and develop nuclear technology for civilian purposes, stressing that the West's dispute with Iran over the country's nuclear program must be settled peacefully. The regional alliance between Moscow and Tehran has angered some Arab states, particularly oil-rich Saudi Arabia. Last week, Riyadh said it would let oil prices fall to $80 a barrel, which many consider a kind of predatory pricing.
The indications are that they are not going to cut production, which means that their geopolitical reasons might be in the saddle there. They may be trying to hurt Russia, Iran, other oil producers who aren't OPEC members, but it's also true that they'll hurt American producers.
Many analysts believe the low price set by Saudi Arabia is meant to test its alliance with Washington and also cause real harm to Saudi competitors, mainly Iran and Russia, which have been outspoken opponents of Riyadh's foreign policy of supporting terrorism in the region.
Well, let me introduce our guest for this edition of The Debate. We have political commentator Shabir Rezvi, who joins us from London, and former U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense Lawrence Korb, who joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome. Lawrence Korb, the strengthening of Russia-Iran alliance, basically, would you agree it's a response to Western threats and sanctions, especially ones coming from the U.S.?
Well, I think in this world in which we live today, nations don't have permanent friends or enemies. They have permanent interests. And I think Russia is still working with the so-called P5 plus one to come to an agreement with Iran about its nuclear program. We have differences with Russia over Ukraine, but we work with them not only with the negotiations with Iran, but they help us get our equipment in and out of Afghanistan, and the Russians are on the same side as us, as are the Iranians, in dealing with the situation in Iraq. We have different views about Syria.
Well, you mentioned two topics there, Shabir Rezvi. I'd like to ask you on the one topic that has to deal with Iran's civilian nuclear energy program, and overall in terms of the nuclear program itself. Now, it's very interesting. Lawrence Korb says that the U.S. is, and Europe, we could put in that equation, is working with Russia. I'm wondering what working with Russia means when it comes to the diplomatic efforts that are being supposedly put into motion here. Because when it comes to Iran and when it comes to Russia, it doesn't seem like diplomacy is really the route to go, even though they're engaged in talks. I mean, talks with Iran, for example, purely exertion of sanctions. and also Russia now experiencing the same?
Hello, good evening. Look, at the end of the day, I think our commentator from Washington quite sort of clearly put that the West has always seen, and especially the Washington consensus, that permanent interest is more important than permanent friends. Yes, I understand that, you know, the dynamics of geopolitics and international relations is quite fluid at times. But what that statement really indicates is that there's no morality or ethics in that kind of foreign relationships. Insofar as USA or the Western nations working with Russia or Iran in any of the theaters is concerned, without the input of Iran or Russia, either in Afghanistan or Iraq, the situation could be even more chaotic. But what's interesting and what's important to realize that at one time, the Washington consensus partners often use P5 plus one and other diplomatic methods to try to get some relationship going. But at the same time, sanctions are being used, an excessive method that Obama administration has applied both to Russia and Iran at this moment is to use oil as a weapon of choice, whereby sanctions are put on companies like Gazprom and also for Iran not to supply oil to other nations like India, China, and most of the European nations. The tragedy of all this is that even if one is thinking from a purely interest point of view, I don't think it serves the interest of Washington or the European nations to keep Iran and Russia outside the matrix of international transactions and trade. It is having a boomerang effect, as I have previously pointed out. We in the West have been going through an economic crisis for the last 6-7 years since the financial situation became quite difficult and tragic. Most of the European countries at this moment experiencing high unemployment. We have possibility of increased unemployment in even Germany and France, Italy, Spain, Greece. You look at each of the nations right. In the European Union, they're facing difficulties. And, you know, if one is talking about interest, we should really have, good trade relationships with Iran and Russia so that our people in Europe do not lose out.
Well, Lawrence Korb, can you please take us, if you can, I'm not too sure if you can, but what is the thinking that the U.S. has in Europe? Like, if they're looking ahead, they're looking at Russia. They had their posturing towards Russia before the relationship with Russia, before the relationship with Iran. And of course, in talks with Iran on the civilian nuclear program. But what are the steps do you think these two countries are taking in America's point of view? And what could America be thinking when it comes to these two countries forging an alliance, a stronger alliance, and then obviously extending that alliance to other countries? I mean, is the U.S. thinking ahead in that respect? And what kinds of thoughts could they have?
Well, I think so. I mean, what the United States basically wants, and a lot of other countries want, is an international system where there are certain norms. You respect the borders, for example, of other countries. Basically, you abide by treaties that you sign. I mean, the whole negotiations with Iran really involve over whether it's, you know, living up to its obligations under the Non-Proliferation Treaty, and that's why the UN authorized a lot of the steps that have been taken. The same way with Russia, they violated an agreement that they made in 1994, the so-called Budapest Memorandum, where they said if Ukraine would get rid of all of its nuclear weapons, move them back to Russia, that Russia, along with the United States and the United Kingdom, would respect the territorial integrity of Ukraine, including Crimea. Now we've seen that, you know, the Russians have taken back Crimea. And I think it's interesting in terms of the sanctions against Russia, Europe has a much bigger role to play than the United States. States. We're only marginal in terms of the trade that we do with them. Germany is really the key player. So, I mean, basically, that's what the United States is trying to get. And this whole idea about, you know, Saudi Arabia, you know, producing more oil to keep its market share, it's for them, not for the United States. They started the whole OPEC arrangement back in the 70s when they were upset about the United States and countries like the Netherlands' policy toward the Middle East.
Well, you talk about oil. Let's talk about that with you, Shabir Rizvi. Doesn't make sense what Saudi Arabia is doing. I mean, really, what could be the motives here aside from geopolitical ones? Because Saudi Arabia has taken a hit regarding this. Of course, there's always the analysis that, you know, it's the shale gas production in the U.S. That could be part of the reason. But when you want to take a look at the reasons behind Saudi Arabia trying to, I don't want to use the word manipulate, but it's manipulating the market in terms of the price. Is that then equivalent to using oil as a weapon in geopolitical interests?
Well, I don't know if Saudi Arabia is doing as a geopolitical strategy or just simply to control the market. You talked about shale oil and all the hoo-ha and sort of hype being created about shale oil. At the end of the day, the oil that is produced in the Gulf region, including Iran, is very competitively produced, very economically produced. We have 93 billion barrels of oil that is produced on a daily basis globally. Shale contributes only 6 billion barrels, if you like. So in sort of totality of the situation, it's only marginal. Yes, of course, over the years, USA has become more independent of the oil being imported from the Middle East. But USA is only one country. Europe is very much dependent on oil from the Middle East. India is very much dependent. Japan, most of the Far Eastern countries, all these nations are dependent on Middle Eastern oil. So Saudi Arabia, really by taking this particular route of trying to bring the price of oil, because at this moment, Saudi Arabia has a sort of big foreign exchange. It is actually losing in Syria, and possibly is becoming very clear that the Saudi interference and influence of the Wahhabi and Salafi trends in the Muslim world is becoming very clear to Muslims living from Malaysia to Morocco, that Saudi Arabia is really the creator of all the sectarian problems in the Muslim world. Therefore, they're perhaps using another tactic to create more influence in the Muslim world. But I think in the long term, Saudi policy is actually going to be, it's not going to benefit them, because when the price of oil